And finally, here's a minor victory for those of us concerned with at least exposing the kind of abuses that are going down here. It's in Thursday's, wow, this is actually a couple months old, pre-2019 records in question, defeat for police unions over records transparency. This is before the George Floyd killing. Story by Thomas Peel, Suki Lewis, and Alex Emsley in the March 14th Mercury News. In a blow to the police unions in San Francisco trying to block the release of officers' disciplinary and use of force records, a state appeals court on Tuesday declined to hear an appeal of a Contra Costa County judge's decision last month that pre-2019 records can be made public, letting that decision stand. Appellate judges dropped the matter after they found no reason to think that Superior Court Judge Charles Treat's decision that previous year's records are included in the state's new police transparency law, Senate Bill 1421, would be overturned on appeal. A stay on the release of records will end Tuesday unless the unions appeal to the state Supreme Court. And I don't know if they did or not, but I may be able to look it up. And I'm not finding the actual outcome of this case. And again, the story is about a year and a quarter old, March 14th, 2019, but still seems significant. So I'm going to finish the story, maybe even add a little to it. Unions representing police officers in the Walnut Creek, Antioch, Concord, Martinez, Richmond, and the Contra Costa Sheriff's Department had appealed Treat's decision. That's Judge Charles Treat. They'd sued their cities in January to block disclosure of the records. Police union lawyers did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Rick Perez had intervened trying to get records on the killing of his son, Richard Purdy Perez, by Richmond police officers in September 2014. "I just want the truth," Rick Perez said Tuesday. I don't see why the police wouldn't want it released. I'm happy with the decision." This news organization, KQED, yes, say the Mercury News, KQED, the Center for Investigative Reporting, and Investigative Studios, an arm of UC Berkeley's investigative reporting program, also intervened in the case, arguing the law applies to old records. So they claim it's retroactive and not just having to do with records in the future. "This is the strongest signal yet of something that should have been clear all along. The public's right to know trumps the police union's desire to cover up bad behavior," said Bert Robinson, managing editor, content for the Bay Area News Group. "Hopefully the unions will now stop wasting everyone's time and allow this important law to tell Californians what they need to know about their law enforcement." Benjamin Thorault, head of the Richmond Police Union, said Wednesday it is considering pushing ahead with an additional appeal. "All options are on the table, including appealing to the California Supreme Court," he said. Five Superior Court judges have rejected union arguments that the law is not retroactive. One judge in Ventura County preliminarily ruled in favor of the union's arguments. The First District Court of Appeals decision was the first flat-out rejection of a union appeal. Appellate judges in Los Angeles also rejected a union appeal of a stay, but did not rule out the merits of its argument. David Snyder of the San Rafael-based First Amendment Coalition said Tuesday's ruling is just the latest in a string of judicial rejections of the police union's arguments. The thing that's notable about this appellate decision compared to the previous appellate decisions is that this one really takes the union's arguments on the merits, he said, and says that their legal arguments are meritless. Snyder said the legal avenues for police unions to block release of the records are getting narrower with each decision. The law, sponsored by Senator Nancy Skinner, Democrat of Berkeley, opens police disciplinary records on sexual abuse and dishonesty cases and use of force investigations involving serious bodily injury and shooting. It was actually a limited law. It was made weaker by the police unions. That story is Defeat for Police Unions Over Records Transparency by staff writer Nate Gartrell, Thomas Peel, and Suki Lewis, as well as Alex Emsley. KQED's story has more on this issue, again written around the same time in March of 2019. "Even with the new disclosure law, fight continues to unseal California's secret police files. This is by Suki Lewis. Actually, the same group. One had sex in the front seat of his squad car. Another stole thousands of bullets. Others used force illegally, cavorted with sex workers, lied in reports, and trumped up charges. None of these police officers were prosecuted. These are just some of the revelations made public in the first months of the new state of police transparency in California. Senate Bill 1421 has broken down a wall of secrecy built up since the 1970s that blocked public access to the most serious police misconduct and deadly use of force information. In the weeks before the law took effect on January 1st, journalists throughout California formed a coalition called the California Reporting Project to request and report on the newly unsealed records. The initial group, including KQED, the Bay Area News Group, Investigative Studios, Investigative Reporting Program, KPCC, Capital Public Radio, and the LA Times, has grown significantly since the start of this year. As of Monday, the coalition of over 30 news organizations had made requests to 675 police agencies in all 58 counties since January 1st. KQED, the Bay Area News Group, and UC Berkeley students filed more than 460 of these requests, including the ones to all state agencies that employ police and all police departments in Northern California. Boy, I got to put them to work for me. That would be so cool. Overall, participating news organizations have combined to blanket the state with more than 1,100 public records requests. Some requests are duplicative, while others pertain to specific cases or individual officers. The newsrooms have agreed to set aside competition and work collaboratively, given the public service this reporting will provide, the California Reporting Project said in a written statement. It's not just journalists who are seeking these records, however. Every one of us has the same story. Richard Perez is part of a club, he said, no one wants to belong to, loved ones of people killed by police. Perez is one of a number of families seeking these records with the help of the ACLU. Every one of us has the same story, he said. It's the police will not release information, and then what little information they do release, it's basically the same story. It's like, I feared for my life. So that gets them off every time. Perez's 24-year-old son, Richard Petty Perez, was unarmed when he was shot and killed outside a liquor store in 2014 by then Richmond police officer Wallace Jensen. Jensen no longer works for the department. The Richmond Police Officers Association sued the city in January to block the release of any pre-2019 records, including Perez's access to information related to his son's death and Jensen's discipline record. It's not some dark secrets to be covered up, Richmond Police Officers Association President Benjamin Thoreau said. It's just that the process is important to folks. Yeah, it's important so they can keep cover up their shit. Officers have long relied on the expectation that information from internal affairs investigations would be kept confidential. Thoreau, the Richmond POA president, said the new law changes the rules of the game halfway through. Records in peril. More than 100 cities have already started turning over records. Others have taken a variety of positions to stall or prevent release. Some cities rushed to destroy the documents they could under state law before January 1st. Morgan Hill burned 8 bankers' boxes full of records on December 27th, according to city attorney Donald Larkin. The city destroyed background reports for people applying to be police officers and internal investigative reports dating back to 1990. Larkin wrote in an emailed response. Fremont also shredded documentation related to citizen complaints and administrative investigations going back decades. In Southern California, the city of Englewood destroyed more than 100 shooting records in the final weeks of 2018, according to the LA Times. Some agencies are choosing to delay rather than destroy. The reasons given for delayed production of records have ranged from an IT crisis in Lodi to a strike in the Imperial County DA's office to a dangerous storage container in the town of Lindsay. The boxes are stacked in such a manner causing it to be dangerous for an employee to enter the container to retrieve the records, wrote Lindsay Police Chief Chris Hughes. We are in the process of placing a new container for storage and organizing the old container, so it is not dangerous to enter. But most agencies that have refused access to records are doing so because of the threat of legal action or lawsuits filed by police unions. Unions fight to keep records secret. In at least 9 counties across the state, police officer unions have sued to keep their records secret, arguing that the new police department transparency law should apply only to incidents after January 1st. So far, few courts agree with the union's arguments. The California Supreme Court has twice declined to take up cases on SB 1421's retroactivity. Other courts have overwhelmingly ruled in favor of transparency. The LA Police Department, tied up in litigation since the beginning of the year, started providing records last week after courts rejected the union's argument. Superior Court judges in Contra Costa, Orange, Santa Barbara, San Diego, and San Bernardino counties have all ruled for releasing the records, and those decisions have survived subsequent appeals. Cases are pending in Merced and Fresno counties. A Ventura County judge is so far the only one in the state to preliminarily rule in favor of keeping records from before this year a secret. A lawsuit brought by the San Francisco Police Officers Union is at a similar stage after the city attorney agreed to delay providing records until the case is heard, which is scheduled for early April. It's becoming quite clear through numerous court rulings that the union's arguments are totally groundless, said David Snyder, head of the San Rafael-based First Amendment Coalition. I think I've read this before. David Mastagni, a labor lawyer who represents police officers, said records created before 2019 were never intended for a public audience, and that releasing these documents could expose sensitive information about both crime victims and officers. What's concerning to me is the demonization of police, Mastagni said. It's important to remember that both the third-party victims and law enforcement have important privacy rights that need to be balanced with these disclosures. We wouldn't want people peeking a little too deeply. That might be very, very embarrassing. And the Attorney General also helped to stall the release, as I think I read to you earlier. And I'm going to leave that story there. There's actually more to it, but it's what we really need to get is the most recent update, as well as the situation in Santa Cruz, which I'm assuming that police are making gestures, Mills particularly, as though they're transparent. Whether they're actually being transparent, I don't think so, because their failure to respond to the series of questions I asked as recently as a month ago. And they were questions that didn't actually demand providing police records, but that indicated the lack of response by Mills indicates to me a lack of interest in actually addressing the issues and a desire to continue the status quo, which has to do with keeping things under wraps and maintaining a position of power and special privilege for police officers, a dangerous one for the rest of us.
George Floyd, Freddie Gray, Breonna Taylor, Delron Small, Eric Garner, Sandra Bland, Walter Scott, Tanisha Anderson. Tamir Rice, Botham Jean, Alton Sterling, Philando Castile, Natasha McKenna, Eric Reason, Michelle Cousseau.
Got to Be Carefully Taught, written by Rodgers and Hammerstein, originally for South Pacific, or at least a version of it was. And it also, of course, has a bit of Say Their Names, and it's sung and put together by Layla Salins, who says she created this music video in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement to grieve the African-Americans who've been killed due to police brutality, and in celebration of the tolerance for diversity, which is at the core of our American democracy. What American democracy is that, I might ask? Now under assault. And, yeah. Today is June 17th, 2020, and it's around 11:10. I'm talking with Daryl. Hi, Daryl. I'm,
well,
you know, a little frantic. How about yourself?
Today I'm a little more calm. I'm getting more and more calmer these days. I'm just, like I said, just sitting here by the creek and waiting for the sun to warm up the air so I can get in the water.
And you are outdoors. You've been outdoors for a number of years on and off. You've got some pretty strong and well-organized ideas on how to deal with homeless concerns, problems, and so forth. And you're back in town, kind of, or at least in the area.
Yeah, that's right. I am. And, yeah, I've been a long-time homeless person, something of a volunteer, just doing something of a calling to try to, as my mentor encouraged me to do, to be like an older brother to other homeless people on the streets. And I think as a result of that, because of this aspiration, I've come up with an idea that has been... It's unique because it focuses on cultivating the human potential in the homeless population, and the homeless people are encouraged and supported in ways to develop, to bootstrap ourselves out of poverty and pay ourselves for doing so. And there's ways to get the funding via for-profit and non-profit funding streams as well.
Now, Daryl, let me interrupt you to ask: when you left, you were passing out some literature around. I don't recall the specifics, but I suspect it was a similar idea. Is this a development of that idea?
I condensed all these ideas into the 16-point plan, again, which focuses on cultivating the human potential in the homeless population. Mm-hmm. There's a talent force here. There's a labor force, and there's people, but in all people. Mm-hmm. The paradigms I use are more sophisticated. It takes a positive psychological approach to addressing homelessness, and not one of grounding down homeless people, blaming everything that goes wrong on homeless people. This is a fault of the...
Well, you know, my main interest, Daryl, has always been in restoring civil rights to people who are outside and to the community generally. And that really is my focus. So I really will continue to try to draw back the conversation to that, which may not interest you that much. So, but I'm going to do it anyway because that's...
I'm describing it in the only way I can see it. I think I have a pretty sophisticated view of how homelessness is. So I can...
Well, you've been outside a lot. Have you... Have you Right. Have you been experiencing, you've been gone for about 3 years, yeah?
Yeah. I was here about 5 years, and I've been gone for about 3 years.
Have things changed at all? Have you noticed? How long have you been back, I should ask first?
I got back, I think in mid-March, and then not long before, no, early March. And then the COVID thing came up, so I got stuck here for about 2 months. And then I slipped away to New Mexico, and I came back about 10 days ago.
What have you observed? Has there been much of a change? COVID, obviously, is a big change, but independently of that, is there anything you've noted that, you know, that we should know about, that you've observed?
When it first came down, I found myself kind of trapped here. I didn't know that I could, you know, get away from the area on a Greyhound. But so I was really scared. I thought, when they treat us this as bad as they do during good times, what are they going to do to us during this time? You know, cramp, you know, squeeze us all together and something to kill us off, you know, with the virus. So I was really worried about these guys.
Others are worried about that too. Go ahead.
And they also, you know, the sleep deprivation thing is, you know, that's part of their job. I pointed this out to them that, you know, when you guys deprive us of sleep and, you know, your collective punishment, you guys are guilty of war crimes. And the cops tend to acknowledge that. I tried it in New Mexico. I was afraid to try it here. But they changed their tone when I brought it up to them. So it was, I was really afraid. And then I did get away. And then I kind of relaxed. I saw that things were actually improving for me over the period of time. And then I came back. A friend of mine has recently said that since this COVID thing came along, the cops are really easing up on people here. Mm-hmm. And I had heard early on the CDC, they had said that for homeless people, the guidelines for us was to stay in place.
Correct.
In our campsite.
Correct.
So I think the public officials are moving along those lines.
Well, they are in part. In other parts, they're just ignoring those guidelines. And, of course, people are being crammed into these COVID, congregate shelters that, you know, are, in fact, everybody in the same area, even if they're told to keep 6 feet apart, and even if they're in tents inside the shelters, which is kind of a new thing, and I suppose provides some privacy, and that's a good thing. But, you know, in no way does it really deal with the most vulnerable homeless people who are still outside, who should be being given motel rooms. This is at least the position of Huff and the Santa Cruz Homeless Union, which has formed about a year ago. You may have heard about them. They're around now.
I don't know what they do. I've seen their name mentioned on flyers.
Yeah, they are trying to raise issues, essentially civil rights and to some extent service issues. I think it may intersect with some of your ideas, but it's, you know, it's probably a somewhat slightly different area. My problem.
This organization's name again?
It's called the Santa Cruz Homeless Union, or Union of the Homeless. It's an attempt to resuscitate an old union that was formed about 25 or 30 years ago and was it had some, at least some strength and some voice in some cities.
Hey, there's other cities in California that are kind of part of the same, like California Homeless Union.
Yes,
so?
That's correct. At least in the last year. Yeah.
Unlawful Lodging Act is really, really vulnerable because cops have been using that, and it kind of opens the doorway for them to doing more, breaking more laws. I mean, like I said, these laws of sleep deprivation, collective punishment, and also the use of these I call them electronic sonic torture devices. You know, they're EMF guns, basically. And like they have one behind the bank. What is it? The bank on.
You're talking about the high pitched noise devices?
Yeah, that's right. And they, they can target those with like guns.
Yeah, they're called mosquito devices, I believe.
What are they?
Mosquito devices. Did you get any sleep?
He didn't. What's that?
Did you get any sleep?
No, I hadn't fallen asleep yet. I was still awake on all occasions.
Ah, so did it interfere with your rest on those occasions?
It interferes with your brain function.
I gotcha. So I imagine it also interfered with your sleep.
It's a torture device.
Well, it's all for your own good, son. You know that. Daryl, do you see any hope with the rise of the...
Yeah, the police do their bidding rather than try to do something that's fair and just for the...
Daryl, do you see any hope in the rise of the Black Lives Matter movement with all the focus on police abuses throughout the country?
Yeah. I think that might be another fact. I do and I don't, because there's still murder. Like in Atlanta just the other day, and I think there was another
That's right. That's Chris Hedges' book. Yeah, you're talking about Chris Hedges' book, that war is something that gives us, gives our lives meaning. Yeah,
it's a war is a force that gives us meaning.
Something like, yeah, I remember. I heard his lecture on that. I think a couple of years before he put out the book. That was like 20 years ago. But it was a very powerful statement, and it's available. I think he's online for anybody listening to this who wants to check out Hedges. On
that
war is a force that gives us meaning. Yeah.
You know, you get out there and you're in wartime. That addiction is a great big rush, and a lot of people like that. You get extreme sports, things like that, or extreme lay your life on the line by killing others is kind of an extreme sport for a lot of these guys. To go Team USA, all this other crap is like the way it's portrayed on TV is like a sporting event.
You know, this business about the use of 647E, the unlawful lodging law, which you're talking about, it's one of the kind of go-tos that Chief Mills, who's our new, he wasn't around when you left town, but he's the Santa Cruz police chief down in Santa Cruz. He has been using that law, blocking the sidewalk, being in a park after dark, being in a closed area, and public nuisance, all as a substitute for the sleeping ban, which, as you know, the law against sleeping in Santa Cruz is under a shadow because of the Martin versus Boise decision up in Idaho, which you probably read about.
I did see that, yeah.
I'm going to have to ask you to give me a 3-minute summary, and we will pick this conversation up again because I got to go.
3 minutes.
Whatever. Well, nothing. No, don't summarize. I'm going to give you the last 3 minutes, so I'm not the one taking up all the conversational time.
Oh, okay. Yeah, here's something. You know, if we can put it back on the public policymakers, that what you guys are doing, it either demonstrates you're incompetent to manage and govern a civil society, you have ulterior motives, such as you're being bribed by the housing industry, the members of the Chamber of Commerce, insurance and everything so you can keep your job, or you're just a sadistic. You know what you're doing. You're also guilty of war crimes. These four cases. If you can establish that the law is based upon an unjust reasoning in itself, and you know, public officials who are incompetent, maybe they should be removed, and a law put in place that takes humanitarian and civil concerns. It's not just like hundreds of thousands of homeless people are being affected by homelessness. It's more like over 300 million. A kid walking down the street and seeing somebody passed out in a doorway, that kid is being affected by this, especially as they grow up. They say, hey, this is pretty commonplace. I might do this too. That's not a good idea. We need a positive psychology rather than a negative psychology. In the 80s, they were talking about, maybe the 70s too, like, you're going to see more crime, you're going to see more mental illness. They have worked very, very hard to cause their prophecies to come true. In the early days, there was more psychedelic use, less meth and alcohol than you see today. And I think this is because they've used this negative psychology of grinding people down. But psychedelics have been vindicated. The marijuana is now seen as a cash crop. The military is using psychedelics to treat their what they sometimes call moral injuries. The pharmaceutical drugs aren't using, so they're using these things. They used to lock people up for 9 years to kill their... A renaissance period that came along with the hippies and a higher consciousness movement back in that time. That's kind of my summary.
Cool. Well, let's pick it up again when we talk, and when you call in again, hopefully we'll continue the conversation.
Okay, I can. Maybe I just call you offhand, and you can record it. Is that cool?
Yeah, that's fine with me if you're up for it.
That's more of how I am. Sometimes I forget what day it is. I don't remember to call in at night.
You're not the only one, Daryl. So.